Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is Dr. Nancy Zimpfer, Chancellor of the State University of New York. Chancellor Zimpfer, welcome back to the Capital Connection.
Thank you, Alan. Good to be here.
Well, since we last met, lots of interesting things are happening. You and the governor seem to be on the same page when it comes to using the SUNY campuses as an economic engine as well as a place of learning. You want to tell us a little about that?
Well, that's the big idea that we've been working on for these past 3 years, to put forward the capacity of the State University of New York to help with New York's economic recovery. And I always add, Alan, and the quality of life of every citizen in the state, given that we're 30 miles away from every citizen in our 64 campuses. Arts and culture and education and preparing smarter, brighter, more creative students. That's all a part of it. But I would say yes. I think SUNY has found its champion, somewhat long overdue, someone in the governor, Governor Cuomo, who believes that we can play a big role in economic recovery, educating more students, maybe spending more money in the communities in which we reside, but importantly, creating jobs that our students can take. So the concept in last year's legislative session and this year, NY SUNY 2020, is all about investing in SUNY for that better outcome.
Well, why don't you tell everybody who's listening what that bill was and how it helped SUNY?
Well, it really has two sides to the same coin in some respects. You know, and a number of people who watch the political front are aware that for some time we've been trying to convince the legislature and whoever the governor happened to be that a more thoughtful way to do tuition was in order. First of all, modest increases, and I know that you know our tuition hovers around $5,000 a year. And to add to that, increments that were predictable, maintained accessibility for our students, and family and parents and students themselves could actually plan for the cost of college. So we got it. Last year, we got this thing called rational tuition, modest increases over 5 years. And I know the word modest is relative, but you know how low our tuition is relative to other public institutions. So students could be more planful. So that was the big plank.
Is that right? It is lower than other public institutions?
It is lower than any of the public institutions in the Northeast, and in the bottom quartile of all public tuition across the country.
So when a young person goes to SUNY, that $5,000 and room and board, what do they end up paying for a year?
Well, I think if they're in a full baccalaureate residential context, they're probably going to get close to $20,000, including everything, not only residence, but books and the cost of sort of living on campus, that kind of thing. But a lot of our students are not residential, and the tuition for our community colleges is lower yet, although some community colleges are starting to build residences and having some great success with that. So our goal is to have students graduate debt-free. That's another issue on everybody's mind, something.
Well, how can you do that?
Well, first of all, we have some ideas about how students, many of whom work while they're in college, could work in their field. So President Obama is talking about increasing the number of work-study opportunities which employ students on campuses, and that's a really good thing and could be really helpful.
The feds come up with money to give to the students to do that?
Is that to give to the universities to employ the students.
Okay.
And of course, the feds come up with Pell Grants.
Yeah.
And New York comes up with the Tuition Assistance Program.
TAP.
And if we could add to that a comprehensive access to paid internships, especially internships in the companies or nonprofit organizations that students aspire to work in for life, we know that, A, they can help pay their tuition while they're in college. And second, believe it or not, there's an over 90% success rate for students getting job offers when they serve in these internship or co-op experiences.
It certainly is how we do it here at WAMC.
Well, we're sitting right now. I mean, we do it too at the universities. Yeah. We hire students as interns.
Yeah, and so there's that. Is being chancellor hard, as hard as I think it is? I mean, I can't believe what you have on your plate.
Well, the very thing that makes the position challenging is the very thing I sought. A large, comprehensive system with everything under one umbrella, from community colleges to medical schools, where we could take ideas like co-op and internships. And
what's co-op again?
It's work integrated learning, so you get paid while you're on the job. A lot of people call it intern. It is an internship, but the thing that sets it apart is that it's really part of your curriculum. It's your coursework. And you are told in the sequence of your, hopefully, 4 years, not 6 years, that we will ensure that you get a placement in the industry of your choice. Not just one, but usually two or three.
Chancellor Nancy Ziffer, I wanted to go back to tuition for a moment. One of the things about the legislation that passed that you didn't talk about, I don't think, is that this time, with that modest increase in what we're charging students, the university gets to keep the money.
Indeed. Now, this concept came along a few years ago when, as a state, we are given the approval to collect tuition, but we give it back to the state to appropriate to us. And in really tough times, about 4 years ago, we got a very small percentage back.
In fact, over several years, SUNY has been cut drastically in terms of what percentage of what we spend on each student comes from the government.
Right. We got cut about 30%, really, and $1.4 billion over 4 years. So, you know, the state was in massive deficit, two $9 billion deficits 1 year right after the other.
What does that mean, deficit? I'm sorry.
Well, that means that the state was short on its own income, so it couldn't pay its bills. So it had to reduce its budget by the amount it couldn't pay.
So the campuses had to eat that, right?
Well, we weren't alone. You know, it's a tough thing to talk about, but a lot of cuts were made. We might have preferred other priorities on what got cut, but we got cut. And so that's one of the reasons why last year, for the first time in recent history, we didn't get a cut. And we also got something that you are alluding to called maintenance of effort, that our base operating expenses, that paid by the state, would never drop below that year. In other words, the state would not only maintain its effort to support SUNY and CUNY, but we would make sure that the funds went to the campuses where the tuition was collected.
Well, a lot of people are giving Governor Cuomo credit for that, but I suspect you deserve a lot of credit also, Chancellor, because obviously there were some intense negotiations.
Well, you know, like everything, it's a partnership. And it works best when SUNY, a large state asset, can work hand in glove with the governor, and the governor, in turn, can work hand in glove with the legislature. So not only did we get this rational tuition and maintenance of effort, we got an investment last year in our four university centers. And this year, under NY SUNY 2020 Round 2, the governor has opened up the possibility that our other 60 campuses can apply in collaborative partnerships for state money that's part of this NY SUNY 2020.
Now, it's very interesting that you say that, because I was going to ask you that. It was on my list. I know that some of your college presidents who were at the four-year colleges, which, you know, after all, produce a good deal of the graduates of the state, thought that they had been left out and to the exclusion of the university centers. And now you're breaking a little news here, which is that it looks like they're going to be included in getting some of these resources which have been offered up by the governor.
It is fait accompli. This is what we are doing. We're setting aside again $60 million and you can apply for up to a proposal that would fund from $5 million to $20 million. I suspect, given that we helped develop the criteria, that if a if a group, a university or a set of universities, comprehensives or community colleges or technical colleges, were to apply as a group, they'd have a better chance of a $20 million grant.
You need, Chancellor Zimmer, to explain to us what this program is, because I think a lot of people are sitting there scratching their heads. In other words, what are they applying for?
They are applying, they are presenting proposals to the governor about how they too can help drive economic development.
So if Oswego or New Paltz or one of those places gets together and says, okay, we've got this plan to do it, how do we know it's not going to be political? I don't like you people, or I need you more for my electoral efforts. How do we know that the criteria will be applied by the governor's office will be fair?
Well, that's interesting, because when the four university centers applied or presented their proposals, they were really meeting the expectations of the governor and me, the chancellor. So it was written into the law that we would be the final arbiters of whether or not those proposals met what we hoped they could do with economic development. This year, when you have a broader base of campuses presenting proposals, I suspect, although I don't know yet, that we'll use a review process not unlike the way the governor funded the regional economic development councils. Mm-hmm. Remember, setting aside a considerable amount of funding, $200 million. He had a small team of people come in and review the proposals. And I think since we've opened this up to all 60 of the remaining 64 campuses, we'll have to have some kind of a review process that people have confidence in. And we're just not quite there yet.
Chancellor Nancy Zimmer is with us today on the Capital Connection. So let me ask you this. When we start to pay all this attention to making SUNY campuses into economic drivers, there certainly will be a philosophy instructor sitting there who said, whatever happened to liberal arts, teaching people how to think? Why are we going in for all this business stuff?
Well, I can't say that that's an uncommon observation, because I meet regularly with the University Faculty Senate, and we talk about, is this effort to help New York recover compromising our fundamental mission of teaching, research, and service? And the good news is that we are increasingly, as a country, and particularly in business and industry, getting a more enlightened view about what a liberal education does for a future employee. Repeatedly, the business sector has said, we want smart graduates. We want people to come to our companies who are intellectually well-rounded, who are creative, who know how to solve problems, who know how to work in teams. And I'm a big believer, I know you are, that our general education curriculum, which is typically the first 2 years of college, and a liberal degree, I'm an English major and I became a chancellor, how'd that work? That these disciplines in the arts, sciences, and humanities can really contribute to a future career. It can't supplement or replace being trained as an engineer, but I've heard many an opportunity from engineering colleges to make sure the students are liberally educated. So I see it as a hand-in-glove relationship. And I say that as often as I can, because it is supported in the literature of experiences of top employers. They want smart people. We want smart teachers. We want smart nurses. We want smart lawyers, often whom have had a major in on liberal arts.
Are the kids at SUNY getting smarter? I say that because I recently had a chance to talk to a class and was blown away by how bright they were.
I'm so glad to hear that.
No, and I, as you know, I was in the trenches for 35 years or so, 40 years, and I didn't remember them being that bright. Now, either my memory is failing, or is the selection process getting tougher? I mean, what's happening?
Well, I think a part of it has to be the internet. I mean, students have so much exposure to knowledge, and I think it just broadens their horizon and helps them bring various disciplines to bear in their thought process. But I have to tell you, Alan, that this notion of whether college adds value is big in higher education. Every national meeting I go to is about finding the right instrumentation to measure progress, intellectual progress, from freshman year to senior year. We're struggling with this in our SUNY campuses, just as other campuses are around the country, but we're very focused on finding some reliable measures that can actually show you, yeah, they're getting smarter.
But when you say adds value, what does adds value mean? I mean, you get a college education. The stats will show you that, you know, employers will pay you some more, some extra. And then if you get a master's, people will pay. Isn't that added value?
It's added financial value. And we also know that the more educated you are, you're a better citizen. You vote more often.
Sure.
You raise educated children, typically raise healthy children. You're a better contributor to your community. But I have to say that one of the interests is, do you in fact know more? And that would require, wouldn't it, a pre and post test. And that is what the community of higher education tends to be struggling with right now. Are you learning more during this 4 years?
Should every kid get a pre-test when they come in and a post-test when they leave?
Well, the interesting thing, glad you mentioned that, we've just launched a concept in Albany, in the capital region, called the Albany Promise. And we are using the available data we have to determine if children are, A, ready for kindergarten. You already know we test them in the fourth and eighth grade. Are they ready for high school? We know there's some concern about readiness for college, because if you don't get a certain score on the Regents exam, you're really not going to succeed, even though it's enough to get a diploma. So, frankly, we have data sources to observe that right now in America, 40 to 50% of all the little ones who come to kindergarten are, quite frankly, not ready for kindergarten.
And what do you have to do to be ready for kindergarten?
Well, I know that it sort of came naturally to most of us, but typically in a home where parents read to children and do their numbers and their letters, that's the kind of thing you need to know to be successful in kindergarten. And who hasn't met a little child who can come up to you and say, I know my ABCs. Now, they might just be singing the song, but it's pretty impressive. I can count to 10. There are so many children, regrettably, children in poverty, who come to kindergarten. They don't know their numbers. They don't know their colors. They don't know their letters. And they are behind before they even get started. So the Albany Promise is a cradle-to-career initiative to use some of the instrumentality we have, even though it's not perfect, to make sure that students are staying successful every step of the way.
Like what? In other words, a kid comes out of a one-parent home where mom may be crack addicted or something like that. I mean, I don't want to paint too bad a picture here, but how in the world can we help that child?
Well, I think the first thing we can do is get organized. We as adults have a little bit of a challenge collaborating with each other. We know that what we do is good. We don't know about what you do. We're not sure how we would fit all this together. So if we can take the early childhood providers, get them in a room, and get them looking at strategies that we know work, and we do know, home visitations on children born in a high-risk environment. It does work. We actually train parents to read to their kids at night. It might come naturally to a middle-class family. It doesn't come naturally to everybody.
What if the parent can't?
Then we bring in help, because that's when the child needs the input and the development. And, you know, the first 3 years of an infant's development are critically important anyway.
Right.
Let's not waste that. So, Albany, I just think this is just the greatest thing that we could possibly be doing, has come together to say we're going to monitor every child's success in these high-risk neighborhoods so that they do come to kindergarten and they do well in the fourth grade. And we keep the heat on so that they pass the test in the eighth grade. But the truth of the matter is that kids are dropping out mentally very early because they can't perform. You can't come to the ninth grade not being able to read. You can't do math. You can't do social studies. So what we announced, which is so powerful, is that educators and social service people and healthcare people and business and industry, along with our elected officials, are going to come together to see that that never happens again here in Albany.
Okay, so you're sitting in Albany right now and you're telling us this, but you know and I know that this show is heard in every market, major market in New York State. So is this a prototype for other places?
Well, actually, it is. We shy away from using the word model because people get this image that you just use a cookie cutter and it'll all be fine. But as you know, I had a significant experience with this approach in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. I've been talking about how we could introduce this across a number of our campuses at SUNY. And I'm proud to say that the same launch that we've now done in Albany has happened in Rochester and in Plattsburgh. And people are interested in Yonkers and Queens and Harlem. So this is going virtual.
How do you supervise, if it's a good word, the presidents of all those campuses? In other words, how do they know whether they're doing a good job or a bad job? It's always been my impression that if you're not doing a good job, somebody calls you and taps you on the shoulder and says, maybe it's a good time to leave. How does it work?
Well, of course, it's a very complicated personnel process, but I will say this. You know, we have this big strategic plan. We are trying to move various metrics. We have asked each of the campuses, all 64, to say which of those big ideas do you have capacity and can deliver on? And then we say, and guess what? Annually, we're going to hold you accountable.
For example, give us one idea that comes out of this that you could hold a campus accountable for.
Lowering their carbon footprint. Or, on the other side of the house, graduating more of their students. Or inviting a more diverse population to their campus.
Now, each of those has an unwanted potential workout here. I mean, for example, if you say to Buffalo up there in the cold zone, you know, lower your carbon imprint compared to somebody who's in the southern part of the state.
It's all relative. So, you have a baseline of your campus. What we're looking for, and you just hit the nail on the head, is progress, moving the dial. But I have to say to you, and this I think is really unique about our work at SUNY, we're not only looking at all the metrics all the other higher education institutions use, like graduation rate or matriculation from freshman to sophomore year or number of courses to degree. We are looking at measures of our social impact, often things that we don't totally control. We don't totally control our carbon footprint. We don't totally control energy contracts and how we work with energy providers. But if you have before you a template of where you stand now and you make progress, we at SUNY Central and the Board of Trustees are very interested in that progress.
So graduation rate, there's another one. You know, if you want more people to graduate, you can lower the standards.
That is the flip side of that argument, to be sure. But I don't view our academics or our university faculty senate or our presidents as wanting to lower the standards. But I will say this, we should be more observant of how students matriculate or move through the degree program. It shouldn't take 6 years to get a bachelor's degree. And sometimes we're the problem. We're not offering the courses they need. We're not giving them career advice. We're not helping them plan the financial implications of the cost of tuition. So, and I'm not saying we're not doing any of that. You know, SUNY's really a great place.
Indeed.
But it can get better. And if we, in the leadership, back to my role, make it perfectly clear that these things matter to us and their success matters to us, that's a move in the right direction.
I only have one more question and we're almost out of time, but Carl McCall is now the chairman of the SUNY Board of Trustees. How are you two doing together?
Well, I think we're doing pretty darn well. We have a great advocate in Carl McCall. He knows a lot of people. He's had great political experience. He works well with the governor's office and the legislature and the caucuses. He speaks up regularly in behalf of SUNY. And so he really is the external, if you will, external face of the institution in much the same way that I am. And then he leads the board in their responsibility to oversee and offer policy for what we do. So I'd say it's working pretty well.
He told me in a recent interview that the first college class he ever taught was at New Paltz, and I got him to do it.
So really? I think that's wonderful. Sorry. Well, he has a great and rich history with SUNY, and we're delighted to have him.
He does indeed. Okay, Nancy Zimfer, it's wonderful to have you here. Chancellor, I know how busy you are. I know what an exhausting schedule you keep for yourself, and we're very grateful that you've given us all the time. Our guest on the Capital Connection has been SUNY Chancellor Nancy Zimfer. Again, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Alan.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.